Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversation with Janice Chiricana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories.
Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Chiricana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Chiricana. Thank you for joining us, and please be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our guest today is Frederick Deshaun Murphy of History Before Us.
Frederick's goal is to preserve for future generations these valuable stories and experiences that will never return. He is committed to making sure that the masses have insight into historical events with the firm belief historical knowledge provides a background for making solid decisions in the future. As the old saying goes, he who refuses to learn from the past is doomed to repeat it. Welcome, Frederick Deshaun Murphy, to Speak On It.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me. I am completely honored. Thank you.
We're so excited to have you. And we're
going
to get right into our first question for tonight. So from your website, it's noted that you always enjoy talking to your elders and hearing stories of family history. In 2016, you founded History Before Us, a project centered on capturing, preserving, and advocating influential history. But what we all want to know is, what was it that actually compelled you to start this project and the initial process?
Yeah, it was by day and by night. I am a licensed clinical mental health therapist. So counseling is something that I have been doing since 2004 professionally. And it was roughly around at the end of 2015, burnout. Like, when you absorb so many people's challenges and problems on a day-to-day basis, you know, it can just have a damning effect on you mentally and emotionally and spiritually, just, you know, your whole holistic self. So at that point in time, I was responsible for a lot of people. I was the director of counseling at a university, and I was the only therapist on the campus. And, you know, you pick up weight, your eating habits are bad, you're not able to do some of the things that you normally do for self-care. So I had to take control of my life, and I had to say, you know what, let me get back to doing what let me self-reflect and get back to doing the things that once brought me, joy. And that was always oral history. It was always sitting down with elders and gleaning different aspects of their lived experiences and incorporating it into my life and, for the betterment of my own future. And that's what I would always do as a kid, too, is just, my grandmother had 13 siblings that were living at one time. And, when they would come down for Thanksgiving, Easter, family reunions, et cetera, et cetera, we would go back up to visit them over my big granny's house, my great granny's house. I'm just a sponge. I'm, that water is hitting a sponge and I'm just absorbing it. It ain't going nowhere. And I ain't going outside until I hear y'all say what I need y'all to say, whether that was surnames, whether that was talking about Jim Crow, whether that was talking about slavery, whether that was talking about how resilient you were or the migration that y'all did from Tennessee to Illinois and then some back to Tennessee. I needed to get all that right there. So that's kind of how History Before Us began, and it allowed me the opportunity to go into making films, doing blogs, and also putting together a presentation that links film with historical trauma. Before COVID, I was going around the country providing the presentation, utilizing film to better understand historical trauma in the African-American community.
Great. And that kind of segues into the next question. So as you mentioned, you're also a filmmaker. So can you share what led you to research and produce the American South as we know it and the other side of the coin, race, generations, and reconciliation?
Yeah, so it kind of coincides with the going back to what it is that I felt like I was very enamored with, which was collecting oral histories. And the American South as we know it, it kind of was a spinoff of this oral history project that I did, where I traveled throughout the South inquiring with individuals who survived Jim Crow, and I call it survive because you needed to survive that. The survivors right. of Jim Crow, their specified experiences and what that looked like. So that led me to Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, all these southern states, right? And, you know, it was just something that just said, you know, you can do more. The ancestors said, you know, this is a very digital and visual society in which we live in. So that led right. me to reaching out to a recent graduate at a university here in Charlotte, North Carolina, who was like, he was the first graduate of the film program. And I was telling him, I said, hey, I don't have a lot of money, but you're a graduate and you don't have any money. So this is what I can offer you. And you just graduated, so you don't have any money. So this is what I can offer you. So we're going to have to hit the road and head down south. And he's from the DMV area, and he like, what you mean by south? He said, we in North Carolina, ain't that south enough? I said, nah, we got to go a little bit deeper than that. So that's what led to the American South as we know it. That was my very first project. And then the other side of the coin, Race, Generations, and Reconciliations, was kind of like a part two of that to a certain degree, and where mm-hmm. I interviewed individuals who were white, and also I have a Native American brother that's in there as well, and identifying what it looked like from white's perspective in regards to history then as well as history now. One individual that I had in the documentary was Susan Marshall. She was a Tate Street picketer there in Greensboro, picketing for her roommate as well as friends there at the Women's College there in North Carolina in Greensboro. Mm-hmm. They can shop in the same stores as other individuals, as well as I have Uncle George Sizemore, whose father was enslaved, and Uncle George unfortunately passed last year. He was a needle in the haystack because there's not very many individuals that are alive today whose parents were enslaved. Right. But I had him as well as Bill Sizemore, and Bill Sizemore's family had enslaved Uncle George's Sizemore, and they came together. There's a book that's out there called Uncle George and Me, and the proceeds of that book goes to Uncle George's family as a scholarship for the kids. So that is their specific way of identifying what reconciliation looked like. And it was beautiful to capture it on film.
That is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So our next question, and this is really interesting because I learned about you from Facebook, and we'll talk a little bit later about that connection that mm-hmm. has come as a result of all of this. On your Facebook page, you post frequently about different sites that you've visited. You provide historical information regarding each site. What actually mm-hmm. determines which sites you will visit? Do you prepare in advance? Excuse me, or do you visit and develop the content you share afterwards?
I really wish I could blog every time I visited a place, but right. because I have so many different projects going on from film, like I'm working on three projects right now, it's difficult to find time to do that. But there's a site that says there's an app called Explore Here. And that app identifies historical places as well as historical markers. So if I'm driving from one state to another, I go to that app and I just kind of, while I'm on the road, I'm able to map out some of these places that I wouldn't have known if I didn't have that app. So shout out to whoever made that app. I need to get some.
What's the app? Can you give us the name of the app?
The app is called Explore Here. Yep.
Wow.
So if you go to Explore Here in your your app store, then that provides historical markers, historical churches, buildings, plantations, etc.
That is great.
So that is an app that I use frequently when I'm traveling from one destination to the next to go to those spots in between. Right. Whenever I'm going to these different sites, I make sure that I research and it's mostly when I'm going to film someplace, I research what's between me and the actual destination to make those stops
right.
along the way. So I always make that time to make those stops along the way. And of course, you know, if you all have seen most of my stuff, it's mostly those unheralded stories that a lot of people may not know about. Because for me, though, I'm an underdog type of guy, and I always have been.
Right.
And I think that kind of matches, you know, some of the things that I had grown up with. And those are the things that I love to highlight. So sometimes I have a mission to go to somewhere in specific, and then sometimes it's just I'm on that app, and then I get the information. Or if I run into one of those good old-timers that's sitting on the porch in some of these rural towns, I ask, you know, hey, is there anyone around here that I can talk to about the history of the town or this or that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are still nice. People are still friendly out there when they get guests. So that's kind of how I rock and roll.
I saw that
nice.
You were in Asheville, North Carolina, which is one of my favorite places, and I have family there. And I think it's I can't think of the name of it right now, but there's an African-American museum there. It's on a small scale, and I've actually been there before. So it's like, hey, Asheville family. And with that being
yeah.
said, and finding you on Facebook, and again, I wasn't looking for you. I just happened to see it. And recently we actually discovered, well, the other night, that we're connected,
mm-hmm.
that we're cousins.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's amazing how things happen. So that has actually been the case with several of our guests, either Sharikhan and I or Bernice, our sponsor, is connected
mm-hmm.
to someone that we've actually
good
interviewed.
Guess, yep.
So, yeah, very, very, nice. Very interesting and spiritually how things happen. So
that
that's just amazing to me. I'm blown away still by that.
Yeah.
And it's great to hear about the Explore here because I had this, like, weird itch to go to Pittsburgh. Like, it's just something I really wanted to do for the longest time. And I finally did
mm-hmm.
it, like, last fall. And I used the Green Book to just kind of like see some of the old spots that were, you know, where the black residents and black tourists could stay. But it would have
mm-hmm.
been cool to have that Explore Here app as well to kind of like guide me around. So that's really, really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah,
so Janice is familiar with you through Facebook. I'm familiar with you through Instagram. So I've been
yeah.
following your Instagram for a while. And one thing I enjoy is that you post the historical markers, which kind of
mm-hmm.
plays on what we just talked about previously.
Mm-hmm.
And you usually have a caption that says education on the go. So
yep.
why do you think historical markers are important to capture? What do you hope to inspire by sharing them? And can you share maybe like just a few markers that have stood out to you and taught you something new or fascinating?
Yeah, because I think that it truly is education on the go, you know, and I think you have to be very intentional when you stop and go to these different historical markers. They provide so much content that the history books usually don't, specifically when you're talking about our history, because of the simple
mm-hmm.
fact that, you know, our history is not covered from a comprehensive standpoint in which it should be in the history books. So I look at those historical markers as just, you know, a quick summarization of what was right here, right? Like what was in this specific community, which of course, when we do those types of things, it allows us the opportunity to, if you're spiritual like me, to kind of get grounded in that, right? And to say
mm-hmm.
that, wow, this is what's here. Let me try to create this depiction in my head of this person or this community prior to my existence, and just kind of bask in that. And that's what I love doing with the historical markers. And, you know, as far as some of the ones that stand out to me, I mean, there's so many of them that I've come across over all the years. But one of the ones that I just left Richmond, Virginia, and I stopped in Pocahontas Island, which is in Petersburg. And I learned about Pocahontas Island maybe like 10 years ago, and I had no clue what it was. I didn't know, of course, the significance because, again, you know, that's not something that was taught. And that really stood out to me because I had no clue about such a large community of free people of color in Petersburg,
mm-hmm.
Virginia, not too far
right.
from Richmond, Virginia, in which we know the history of Richmond, Virginia and the slave trade that was so
right.
aggressive there in Richmond, Virginia. So Pocahontas Island was kind of like a breath of fresh air, because you're able to see this community that you see that your brothers and sisters was able to create prior to the Civil War. And then not only that, it was identified in some of the readings that I have researched, that there's a good possibility that those brothers and sisters helped individuals that were along the Underground Railroad to escape and set up shop in that specific community. So that's the most recent one that I've been that I've seen, and I just love it.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
How many states do you think you've visited?
That's a great question.
I've visited a lot of states. In particular, doing history research, I'll say probably about 15.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll say
that's,
about
that's
15.
That's a substantial amount.
Yeah, and that's, you know, being intentional about the history research. So, yes,
right.
Roughly around 15 states, in particularly doing that piece. And then also Jamaica. And I was supposed to go to the New Gambia last year, but, of course, COVID, and I was supposed to go back this year. I was supposed to go this year,
wow.
But, you know, after that was postponed, to the New Gambia to do some history research with a friend of mine who is an entrepreneur over there, and was supposed to speak to a university, but unfortunately that was canceled due to COVID. And the Bahamas, I'll be going there. Now that has been pushed back too because of COVID, to do some
mm-hmm.
research and learn more about brothers and sisters throughout the diaspora, the African diaspora.
Nice.
Now, during
nice.
Our conversation this week, you mentioned that you were in New Jersey. You want to share a little bit about that? I believe the woman's last name was Rice.
Yes. So McCray, Rose Rice, and she was actually in Columbia, South Carolina, but her family moved to New Jersey, Montclair, when she
Montclair.
Was a child.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Montclair. And her mother helmed the YMCA. She held some high positions there, as well as at Virginia Union University. And there was a book that was called Freedom's Child, I believe it was called. I can't
yes,
remember.
Yes, that's
again.
What you said. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean,
yes,
yeah,
that's
Freedom's
it.
Child.
That's
and
it.
That was her Confederate
mm-hmm.
grandfather that was there in Virginia. I forgot what
mm-hmm.
part of Virginia, but he was a high-ranking individual in the Confederate Army, and that was her grandfather. So that story, that book called Freedom's Child, it
mm-hmm.
details that relationship, and that's the Rice family. And it's just an amazing story. I think Lynchburg is the area that that they were in.
Okay.
And that the book is by Carrie Allen McCray. It is an excellent
yeah, okay.
read. And it's called Freedom's
yeah.
Child, Carrie Allen McCray. And her sister Rose is the person that I was able to sit down and glean her information from an oral history standpoint. She was a graduate.
That's
she was
awesome.
A graduate of she was a graduate of Fisk University. So shout out to all the HBCUs.
Okay, so can you talk to us a little bit about your collaboration with Black Indians in North Carolina?
Yeah, Black Indians NC is an initiative that started 2 years ago, I believe. I have to ask Kimberly. I met Kimberly at a Divining Lines symposium in Atlanta last year. It is a symposium that's put on by Brother Stephen Gale there in Kennesaw State University. And it is a symposium that identifies the intersection of African-American and Native American lives. So what I was
mm-hmm.
doing up there was I was giving a presentation as well as on a panel as it relates to the importance of storytelling and sharing stories. Collecting stories and sharing it with individuals for genealogy research, just general understanding of history. And so Kim and I had met there, and all of our families from the same region in that Warren County, Halifax
wow.
County area in North Carolina. And, you know, just kind of off the humbug, just kind of, Janice, how you and I was doing, was talking and catching up. And I said,
right.
Man, you got a account? And sure enough, boom, connected
yes.
DNA,
yes.
DNA relatives. And we were able to find it. The Evans line is kind of where that is from an indigenous
wow.
standpoint. And so from there, I was saying, you know, because I was already looking for another project to do. As it relates to African Americans and Native Americans, and then also our Afro-Indigenous folks who were here prior to 1619. Afro-Indigenous folks on this side of the Mississippi have been rooted into each other's lives for a very long time, as well as out west.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can dispel that 1619 was the first time that Black folks came here, and this and that, this and that, this and that. And that's my own subjective opinion, but there is research out there that shows that we were here before 1619.
Mm-hmm.
And Kim and I, you know, I sat down, I talked with her, I said, hey, this is a project that I have in mind. You know, you, Cherokee was her first language. Her grandmother was from the Ivory Coast of Africa, and her grandfather was indigenous there at in Cherokee, North Carolina. And from there, we decided to go ahead and create the documentary that's called Duality, a collection of Afro-Indigenous perspectives. Thus far, we're two interviews in, and we have our third interview in November, and we have the official trailer that's up, and you can find that trailer on my Instagram page or my Facebook page, which is History Before Us. So we're just pushing through, sharing that narrative, sharing the interconnectedness of the intersection of Black folks and Indigenous folks, or Black Indigenous folks, however you want to name it, Aborigines, Aboriginal people have all kind of different ways, and I don't knock what people say. You know, I respect whatever you feel your belief is, but for us, we either utilize the word Afro-Indigenous or Black Indians. So that's my connection.
Awesome, great, thank you for that. Yeah, and I have found in the last few interviews we've done, the sort of like Afro-Indigenous connection has come up in some way. So there's definitely more attention that's being paid to that history now. So
sure.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So Frederick, can you please share in your own way some parting words of inspiration to our listeners?
Yeah, man. From a genealogy standpoint, it's just keep chipping away. Like, keep chipping away. If you got to put it down and push the food from the table, push it away for a little bit so you can just not be so consumed by everything that you're experiencing, the roadblocks, you know, the mishaps, you know, the highs and lows of genealogy research. It's okay to do that, right? I have often found myself getting so frustrated, as well as sometimes the vicarious trauma that comes along with reading mm-hmm. about your ancestors. You know, I have three bills of sales of three different ancestors, and I'm just looking at it. And the word that stands out, of course, or the letter or the numbers, is the cost, right? Like how much
right.
they were quote unquote worth or sold to this person. I have one line that was sold four times, and they had four surnames within 12 years. And, you know, you can get, pardon my language, you can get pissed off, right? So
right.
You gotta still maintain that sense of autonomy to where it doesn't take you there. So, but you still have to be persistent. So my biggest parting words, specifically from a genealogy research, is knowing when to kind of put it down and then come back with fresh eyes and utilize every single resource that you can, death certificates, going to the archives, collecting oral histories, asking to look in old people's – let me not say old people – looking into old Bibles, you know.
Okay.
And being very intentional about our conversations with people.
Right.
And it may not just be, it you know, it's like, oh, I'm come over and talk to you about things in the past. No, you need to kind of go there with a plan, right? And,
yeah.
and be very specific about what it is that you need. And I think that is, I think that's some good advice.
Yeah, that's excellent.
You know what? I know. Well, I'm sorry, we're done with the questions, but I'm just curious, how long have you been doing the genealogy research portion
for
your family?
Since I'm 42 now, since I was about 23 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like seriously, going to archives and libraries and stuff like that since about like 23.
Okay, and then the last thing that I wanted to share, that slave bill of sale, I'm talking about that. There is one, and it was it's the first and only one that I've seen. I know Bernice says that she actually has several, but the first time I saw one, it was very, very emotional for me. And I wrote about it, cried about it, and then felt empowered by it, you know, that we're here because she was resilient and she survived. You know, so when you mentioned the slave bill of sales, that was just, that always just touches me and moves me deeply because that just happened last year. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
It can definitely have a profound effect to see that because you're looking at the lens through a humanistic standpoint. Other people may not look at things through that regard and recognize that it's part of your existence and you being here if that person was to had the ability to survive it. And that's why I also utilize the word survivors of Jim Crow, because that's exactly what they are. They were thousands of people lynched during Jim Crow, right? So in order for people, you know, you all's possible parents or grandparents, my great-grandparents, our great-grandparents, et cetera, to have still be here today, there was a sense of survival that they had to have in order to do such. And that's not to shame anyone who did not make it, because we don't do that to any of our ancestors that unfortunately perished.
That's
it was
right,
just
right.
that they were still here, and because of that we're here. And so I always identify these individuals as survivors, what they are and what they were.
Powerful.
Excellent. That's profound. Thank you for that. Well, Frederick, thank you for sharing with us and our listeners. For additional information regarding History Before Us, you can visit historybeforeus.com. And on Instagram, you can find Frederick's visits and just great, great content. And that's History Before Us on Instagram, no spaces, just one word. To our listeners, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
So before we go, you know, Frederick, myself, and Chiricana, we have something special for our listeners this evening. So the first person to comment, all you have to do is scroll down from the link where you're listening and comment, will receive a free pass, to view any of the documentaries, the paid documentaries that are on Frederick's site. So please be sure to do that. And Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Chiricana, is a podcast and is immediately available to listen at your leisure. This show is sponsored by Bernice Bennett of Research at the National Archives and Beyond, Blog Talk Radio. Thank you.
Thank you.